तेरे हजारों हाथ, जिस जिसने तेरा नाम लिया, जिस जिसने तेरा नाम लिया, तू हो लिया उसके साथ। साईं नाथ तेरे हजारों हाथ, साईं नाथ तेरे हजारों हाथ।
ॐ साईनाथाय नमः। Thank you all for joining us today in Satsang. Today is a very special day. We are all here together and we'll be speaking about the book Gautamji and me have published recently, Living with Faith and Patience. And also today is very special because we are launching Vinima's book. And most of you must be familiar with her life. After Narasimha Swamiji, she did Prachar in Shirdi for over 30 years. So this small biography pays homage to her and the great seva, I would say unparalleled service, she rendered for over 30 years in Shirdi. And it's because of her ceaseless efforts, so many people went to these sacred places that Baba sanctified. Many documents that we are today finding, like the time I've spent with Sada, some letters written by the Mahabhaktas, which would have otherwise been lost in the years of the research, they had copied all of these. They had got copies. And through her, much of Baba's history has been preserved. And it's my sincere prayer and hope that for further generations, not only does her work go forward, but it inspires others to take that work forward as well. So, Gautamji, if you would like to begin by
thank you to all of you for coming today. This book, Living with Faith and Patience, came out a few months ago. And this was the result of interviews we did on Nikhil's channel, Sai Baba's Devotee Speaks, based on Baba's teachings. Using Baba's leelas and chamatkars, but trying to find the light of gyan shining through them. And these interviews happened during the COVID pandemic. And since we were pleasantly surprised that they were received so well, we continued it after COVID. So in this book are 55 conversations we have had, transcribed, edited. And if you like a particular conversation, there's a QR code which leads to the video which is on the channel. So for those who are looking to bring the teachings into daily living, then it is a book which we highly recommend. And the book is available outside for sale. And Nikhil and me would be very happy to sign copies for you if you wish. So I don't want to speak too much about this book, but we thought we would delve further into Baba's Gyan. We have a short time today. And I read another book by Narasimha Swami. Narasimha Swami is a bridge between Ramana Maharshi and Sai Baba. Because he was with the great Advaita master, but because his passion for bhakti was so deep, Ramana Maharshi said, your guru is in Shirdi. And this is after Baba dropped the body. And so when Narasimha Swami goes there, he gets a divine insight and inspiration at Baba's Samadhi and becomes the first biographer of Shirdi Sai Baba. Prior to that, Ramana Maharshi had guided Arthur Osborne, a disciple, to write on Sai Baba. So this connection is very deep because it means this great Advaita master who dropped his body in 1950 had such deep regard for Sai Baba that he sent his own disciples there. So our quest has been to delve into Baba's teachings, because so many books have been written on Baba's leelas and then the matter ends there. But what can we learn from the leelas? Because after all, those who came to Baba were being taught those lessons. See, Baba was very cryptic. His teaching was not A for apple. If he took Dakshina from someone, there was a reason behind it. But he would not mention the reason directly. He would just say, give me Dakshina. It was left to his devotees to decipher what the meaning was. So it appears deceptively simple, his statements. Now, one story which is in this book, is this book available here?
Not yet.
Wondrous Sai. It's a small book by Narasimha Swami of accounts, many of which you won't read elsewhere. One conversation really touched me. It was a devotee of his was sitting next to him when a beautiful woman came to Baba. And this devotee was enamored by the beauty of this woman. And Baba slaps him on the thigh. So he said, what did I do wrong? So Baba says, I know exactly what thought was in your mind. But then Baba gives a very beautiful statement. He says, when you go to a temple, you admire the exterior beauty, the carvings, but ultimately you are going to the deity within the temple, to the God within the temple. You don't stop outside and just admire the beauty. Likewise, if you see God in everyone, the external beauty is just a facade. You don't stop there. So when God is acknowledged, in this instance, Baba says, desire drops away. But the point to note is, Baba is not referring just to lust and attraction. What he is pointing to is, see the God, see the deity in everyone you meet and don't judge by the external. We are very quick to judge people. We like their face, we don't like their face. We like their mannerisms, we don't like their mannerisms. We have some favorites in our own family. Amongst our friends, we are picky and choosy. But the same God, the same deity is within everyone, which is consciousness. Without consciousness, we would all be dead bodies. So we lose sight of this when we deal with people in our day. We lose sight of the fact that the multiplicity, which includes people we don't like, are animated by the same consciousness. So our relationship is always between people whom we like and don't like, we love, we don't love, some are somewhere in between. Until our last breath, we live a life of discrimination based on the externals. But the lessons of life for those on the spiritual journey are to go within. So this is one such instance when such a simple analogy of not stopping outside the temple but going within, Baba has conveyed the highest truth of Advaita. But then it has to be lived also. That is why the American mystic Joel Goldsmith said, it is too easy to pray for people we love. When you start praying for your enemies, then you know that you have seen the hand of God above everyone. That is the tapas. That is the sadhana. As Baba says, see me in all beings. You can't exclude some beings from that. You can't exclude those who have troubled you from that, because those who have troubled you are your greatest teachers. If you have the himmat within your heart to thank them for what they are teaching you, then you can say you are on the path of Gyan Tapas. Then yes, you are looking at every relationship, every Rinanubandhan, as a deep learning. Would you like to share something?
There is Kanmo Dina mentioned in Bandra Singh, which deeply impacted me. I'll just paraphrase it. There was a devotee sitting next to Baba in Dwarkamai, and one leper came into Dwarkamai to take Baba's darshan. Baba knows what is in everyone's heart and mind. This lady had a repulsion towards him. Like in her mind, she was waiting for this person to go away. And he stepped up with great difficulty, bowed down to Baba. There was a severe stench around him. And this lady was getting very agitated. He left, and this lady had a sigh of relief. But Baba, knowing everything, asked him to come back, and he had brought a peda, a sweet, for Baba as an offering. So Baba said, give that peda, and he gave it to this lady, and he says, eat it. And she was horrified, taking a peda from a leper. But I feel that Leela is very special, because this is the crux where Baba doesn't want any form of bhed bhav, discrimination. And if one just holds this story close to heart, you know, there are many circumstances, situations, people we'll all come across where it may be difficult. But Baba puts us through these tests. But I feel there is much in that one leela for all of us. Bhattam, if you would like to share anything about that.
It reminds me when I've spoken about this before, when I spend time with my Sufi mystic in Kashmir. He is what is called locally as a Pir Baba. So a lot of local population comes to him with their aches and pains and problems, and he gives either blessings or jadi bhutis or whatever it is. I was sitting with him. I like to sit. I don't understand his words. His Hindi is very different from our Hindi. So a lot of words go beyond me. But I sit, I have my cup of tea, and I watch him. I have learned by watching him. And something so similar happened that a beggar came in. And I was taken aback. I said, how is Baba going to handle him now? And the beggar was very dirty. And the beggar walked in, and with such dignity, Shafi Baba handled him, but didn't want him to stay. Took out some money, gave him a blessing, and very politely told him that I am busy now, so please leave. So I asked Shafi Baba that how do you manage? You meet hundreds of people every day. But this dignity and poise with which you meet everyone, what is your secret? And he said, my secret is very simple. Anyone who comes on in front of me during the day, my first thought is, this person has better qualities than I have. Anyone. Whether it is the person walking into the shop, I go to the grocery store to buy anything, it is my mantra. this person has better qualities than I have. And make no mistake, Shafi Baba is called Badshah by his followers. It is a particular station, kind of honor given. Yet the humility is that we all are flawed human beings because we have incarnated with personality limitations. If we keep looking at flaws in people, we have to remind ourselves about our flaws. So this obsession with negativity and negative qualities needs to drop, whether it is for others or ourselves. And the God within has to be acknowledged. Because God is pure being, pure consciousness. You are listening to me because of consciousness. I am speaking because of consciousness. If there was no consciousness, we would be dead bodies and no communication can take place. So as my spiritual guide Rameshji would say, consciousness is speaking and consciousness is listening. But the Maya is so strong that it appears that this body is speaking and another body is listening. But actually consciousness is speaking to itself and consciousness is listening to itself. That is what is happening. If we lived with this awareness, that is a life well lived.
Before coming on our way here, me and Gautam were speaking about the book Purna Parabrahma. And there was a very beautiful lesson in that. Baba used the word Pahu in Marathi, which means we will see. Wait, we will see. And the two pillars of Baba's teaching, which most of us know, Shraddha and Saburi, we were talking about this in the context of today's times and how difficult it is, you know, for people to discriminate today between what is right and what is wrong. And this is a dilemma that will come in front of us in different ways, but it seems the way the trajectory is going, that in coming times, this is going to be a mainstream thing we will all face, not knowing what is right and what is wrong. And I feel Baba has given a very important cue by just saying that one word, Pahu, which means, wait, we will see. So in time, the truth of a situation will reveal itself. There are so many aspects when we say the word patience. But we were discussing this, that in daily living today, there are so many circumstances, and this one pointer that Baba has given us can give us a lot of peace, because so much anxiety otherwise is caused trying to understand if something is right or wrong, what should I do? But in most cases, you know, if one has to trust something, trust time. And if we are patient enough, the truth will reveal itself.
You know, I was very lucky, Nick. When I first met my spiritual guide, once or twice I went to him with mundane problems, some business situation, a client who potentially would cause a big loss to me. And the only reply he would give is, we'll see. He didn't say, don't worry, beta, sab kuch theek ho jayega, all will be okay. There was none of that. Later, I was so thankful because, you see, a guru who gives reassurance becomes like a crutch. Then any problem, you'll go to the guru. And the guru is not a crutch. The guru represents consciousness. So So we'll see what happens is the same as Baba's teaching. Baba himself has said in so many instances, prarabdha karma is prarabdha karma. Even I, as Baba, cannot change it. This must be noted, because everyone wants to beg Baba to change their karma. And he has emphasized that even in this book, when the plague is there in Shirdi, and he tells a devotee to go through town for a task, the devotee is scared. And Baba says, being here need not mean you will die, and being elsewhere need not mean you will live. What is destined to happen will happen. So this avoiding karma, trying to change karma, is the ego thinking it is in charge of life. And the more the ego thinks it is in charge of life, the more it is disturbed, the more restless it is, and the more peace it is not experienced. It is a life of conflict, because we forget that a higher power makes us breathe, makes our heart pump, makes us sit on a chair, because laws are in action. The law of gravity is in action. But we don't trust this higher power when it comes to the details of daily living. We want to be in charge, we want to be in control, and we want to dominate others. We want to force our view on others, because we feel our view is the right view. And so, not only are we not at peace, we do a good job of disturbing other people's peace. And peace is everyone's birthright. And we have to ask ourselves, whose peace are we destroying? We'll be surprised to find that we take the liberty of destroying the peace of those people who are closest to us. And so this peace is the most simplest measure of where we stand in our life, in our rinanubandhans, in our relationships with people. We reveal it to ourselves, whether we are at peace or not. Otherwise, we are just minds full of conflict, and we are freely distributing that conflict to everyone in our lives. This perpetuates karma and bondage. This is what happens.
One thing I have observed over the years in Baba's prachar, and meeting many devotees. Devotees who've been with Baba for sometimes over 15, 20, 30 years. One thing that surprises me is most devotees till date have not read the full Sai Satcharit. And I would like to take a minute to speak about that, because when we talk of Baba's teachings, the Sai Satcharit is the whole foundation. It's like a Bible. And all of Baba's words are in the full Sai Satcharit. The abridged edition, the small red one, which is very popular, certain things are taken out from the big book. And I feel it's imperative as serious devotees that one embarks on a journey of studying the Satcharit very seriously. It's perfectly fine to continue reading the red book in the Parayan maybe every week or however one does it, but at least once a year to read the full Satcharit. Vinima would recommend the translation by Indra K. There is another translation on the Sanstha's website, which is a free download, which is by Zareen. So this is a word-to-word translation of the full original work of Hemad Panchi. And in this, if you mark Baba's words, you mark Baba's instruction on how to meditate on all aspects of life, I feel this is something as a community of devotees we must definitely do ourselves and even propagate this. Because often on Gautam, like when we speak about the teachings, a lot is missed in the small book. And I feel Vinima's contribution here is immense because she would, many devotees, when they would go to Shirdi to meet her, I'm sure most of you are familiar with her, right? So when many devotees would go to meet her in Shirdi, she would encourage them to read, and she had made a list of books that, are written by Swamiji, all the authentic works written by the Mahabharatas, Anna Saheb Kavalkar, many of them. And she would ask devotees to read, and see, reading is a sadhana. Baba would hold people up if they left their reading and went away. So reading definitely is a sadhana. And I'm very grateful to Ma when I spent time with her. She gave me that list. She said, these are the books, everyone should read at least once. And that actually then became the foundation of House of Sai, where we went on the journey of trying to get these books. Some were out of publication. And this is something we must take up very seriously as a community.
This reading as a sadhana, it reminds me of Ramana Maharshi was asked by some of his disciples about two texts. I think one was Ulladu Narpadu, the other was the Ribhu Gita. Someone said, "I find it difficult to understand." And Ramana Maharshi said, "The reading of it will put you into samadhi." It is not really the understanding. But if that devotion is there and that aspiration is there, even reading it is enough. Because see, words are vibration. Words are vibration. Just as we eat food, we are taking a vibrational quality into us. When we read, we are taking the vibration of those words into our consciousness. And so many masters have spoken about reading the holy scriptures, the sacred texts. That sadhana is something which is getting lost in this age of smartphones and social media. I see it that lesser and lesser people are reading books. But this is one thing I would suggest, that keep some time of the day to reading. Now, coming to vibration, I would like to digress here because I was speaking about this yesterday and food. Why is prasad given to us at temples or at satsangs? Because that is the food which carries the vibration which we take in. It is very important to understand this. Likewise, if we have someone in our house cooking our food who's in a bad mood or is generally life negative, we are eating that vibration. Make no mistake. If we are sitting on a table with our family and having a meal and discussing problems in life, we are eating those problems. We live in a world of vibrations. A flower that you see, you'll say, beautiful flower, beautiful color. It is only a vibration. It is a light wave hitting our eyes and creating a color. So we have to be very mindful of what we see on TV, what we read, and what we eat. Because the Maya is so strong that without knowing it, our consciousness is getting impurities. Then we complain that we can't sleep at night. But what are you feeding your consciousness before sleeping? You see? So there's much more to the spiritual journey than meets the eye. And it needs a degree of reverence, respect, and humility to understand I don't know much about what's going on. There are places you visit, you will feel your energy is going down. There are places you visit, your energy is rising, vibration. There was a Russian who specialized in what he called his version of the law of karma. And he gave a very interesting anecdote that when he was walking through certain sections of a museum, he felt his energy was getting depleted. Other sections, it was fine. So he thought it's his problem. Maybe I need to have multivitamins or whatever. Then he realized, let me see the paintings on the walls of each gallery. And those paintings which were showing conflict and war were draining his energy. Those which were just beauty, nature, landscapes were uplifting his energy. This doesn't mean it'll happen for everyone. He was sensitive to it. But his awareness was so high that he realized he's living in a world of vibrations. And then for himself, he had to understand which vibration is uplifting and which is working against me. So this is the sadhana, you see. Otherwise, what happens? We read one page from the Satcharit, or we do a aarti in the temple, and the rest of the day is a mess. There's such a disconnect from the master's teaching and from the way we are living our lives. But we feel we are doing good karma. But unless you live the teachings, it makes no difference. That living the teaching is the core of it all. Not you doing an aarti or reading one page. That is the starting point. Every guru wants their disciples to be an expression of divinity, not an expression of conflict. And Sai Baba, as Nikhil has pointed out, knew everyone's thoughts. There's a very interesting story here about a devotee who had money, and Baba has clearly said, if a beggar comes to you, give what you can, and if you can't give, don't abuse the beggar. Now this devotee promises a temple priest 300 rupees, which I can assume must be a huge amount at that time, to repair the temple steps. But he keeps forgetting to take the money along. So one day, he's walking to the temple. He says, oh my God, this fellow is going to ask me for the 300. And he changes his direction, avoids the temple, goes to work. In the evening, he is at satsang and Baba refuses to look at him. And he says, what have I done wrong? I am your param bhakt. How can you ignore me? And Baba says, you have the audacity to walk away from Datta Bhagwan, the temple is of Lord Dattatreya, because you don't want to give 300 rupees. Means you're avoiding God because you don't want to give 300 rupees. So, you see, each action of ours reveals where we stand. There's no point saying you are param bhakt and you're not living the master's teachings. And that too, as Shirdi Sai Baba points out, avoiding darshan of God because of 300 rupees. This is how it comes out. And Sai Baba tells him, what harm would it have done if you told this man you were not carrying the 300? So we are lost in this maze. And it is common sense that the world is entering difficult times. Whether it is AI and job losses, which I see, something in the last few months, people coming up to me after satsang and saying, we've lost our jobs, especially if they are in industries related to software, or whether it is the geopolitical situation, which is becoming worse by the day. You don't need an astrologer to make a prediction of what times are coming. And the only sadhana which will pull us out of this, besides Shraddha and Saburi, is being close to the teachings, not losing our minds. It is only Guru's grace and being immersed in satsang. Satsang is what? Not this physical thing. It is the company of truth. And the Maya is very strong. It is this company of truth which will pull us through difficult times. Would you like to add anything to that?
You shared something very beautiful about vibrations. Swami Vivekananda had said, show me what a person eats and the company he keeps, and I will tell you everything about them. And see, in today's time, devices that we have, when we are exposed to so much content continuously, in a way we need to look at it that that may be a one-sided relationship with those people or algorithms. For example, in the yesteryears, people were very particular, especially with the children, parents would be very particular what was the circle, the company the child kept. And just yesterday night, we had an example of a two-year-old child sitting with the phone and was not even able to hear the mother. It was completely, I'm saying it was completely engrossed in that device. So as devotees, if we can be mindful of this, because yes, in today's world, we cannot shun these things away completely either, but to look at it and be very watchful of what we are influenced by. And a constant practice of reading and engaging in satsang, all of you have taken the trouble to come here. Such endeavors and practices help all of us stay on course. So this is why reading today is even more important, and practicing the sadhanas Baba advocated, Nam Smaran, the Vishnu Sahasranam, because this is what will literally take us through times to come. As Gautamji said, things are deteriorating, and of course there is light at the end of the tunnel. But in a way, it's also an opportunity and a test. You know, the masters test us. So I always remember that line of Swami Vivekananda that show me what a man eats and his company, and I will tell you everything about him. So this sort of digital exposure, in one sense, is one's company. So to be very mindful of this.
And company is not just people. What is going on in your mind is your closest company. Like they say, your neighbor is the person living next door, but the neighbors who are closer to you are your thoughts. Your thoughts about people are your neighbors. Your thoughts about yourself are your neighbors. So what is your relationship with your own consciousness? We'll be surprised that most of us are complaining all the time in our consciousness. It's all the time complaining, because the ego loves to complain. The ego loves problems. The ego loves to make people problems and situations problems. And we are walking bundles of problems. It's as if the ego wants to seek out problems. And then the ego will say, poor me, why me? It gets its strength from that. I am the victim here. I am the one suffering. See, coming back to peace, Let us agree that before we were born, we were peaceful. And after we die, we'll be peaceful. Let us also agree in deep sleep, we are peaceful. So the problem is the waking state. God is so compassionate that only in the waking state we are not peaceful. So it is so clear that peace and silence are aspects of the one self, qualities of the self. Conflict is not a quality of the self. Conflict is a quality of an ego which is threatened and does not want to die. So these qualities of the self can only reflect in our equanimity, in daily living, calm, and the silence of the mind. What we call realization of the self is an expression of these qualities. Can you imagine a Shirdi Sai Baba or Swami Vivekananda or Ramakrishna Paramhans having a turbulent mind during the day? Because they had realized the self with a capital S, they had transcended the little self, the me and my story, me and my drama. But we are all walking, talking dramas. Movies can be made on our lives. Serials can be made with multiple episodes and multiple characters, which the world would love to watch because we all want to watch other people suffering. We love it. And there is a phrase called the joy of suffering. We love to suffer because now we know who we are, the one who is suffering. So we love suffering. Because the ego is scared of death. I don't want to die. If someone gives an opinion contrary to yours, you get upset. You want to prove that your opinion is right. Why? Because you don't want to die. You don't want to die to someone else's opinion, which may be different from yours. So this is a journey of death. So that you die before you die. And then death loses its hold on you. Because you're not afraid to live anymore. You are not afraid to die little deaths. That is the spiritual journey. To understand that death does not mean death of the body itself, and to be afraid of death means we are afraid of the unknown. What else? If I promised you heaven after death, why would you be afraid of it? And if I promised you that the money you have in your bank account would still be available after death, you'd be very happy. So the fear of death is the fear of the unknown. The ego loves the known. This is my child, this is my money, this is my house. This is all known. Unknown is scary. The joke is, in deep sleep, what is known and what is unknown? Yet we get up and say we slept well, which basically means when you are absent, you are at peace. It is your own proof. In deep sleep, you are absent, but you get up and say, I slept well. Your story was not present in deep sleep. That is why it was deep. So this attachment to drama in our lives, we love creating dramas and being the hero of the movie. When we give all this up, this Maya up, and we live a simple life, then we are ready to display these qualities of the self.
Baba has said this, that those devotees that love me over family, loved ones, over their possessions, over everything that comes in their life, can leave everything and think of me alone, are my true devotees, and the upliftment of such a one is my responsibility. And a very important thing for us to contemplate on is the life and the conduct of Baba's Mahabhaktas, like Kaka Saheb Dikshit, Noolkar Ji, the ones that attained Sadgati, and Baba validated this. It's a very big thing. So, what were their daily lives like? What were their routines? What were their sadhanas? How would they behave with Baba? There are many cues of bhakti that one will find in their lives. And I feel just by a study alone of and contemplation of their lives, there is much inspiration and direction one will get. And we were very blessed with Vinima. We did a tribute to all the Mahabhaktas. At least 18 of those she had done. And these give very beautiful and deep insights into devotion, the right attitudes. And see, faith also is cultivated. It's an incremental process. So, this is something we must very seriously contemplate. Can we take some questions if anyone has?
Sure, we have about 15 minutes. Would anyone like to share anything or ask anything? Can give the mic at the back a little.
Dearest Gautam, I am Akki. I've been a part of your online satsangs for multiple sessions. It's been a very thankful moment that I got to interact, I mean, see you in person. So, couple of questions, Gautam. See, Ramana Maharshi says everything is destined. What is meant to happen is definitely going to happen, and what is not meant to happen will never happen. So there are many people who say that, okay, if that is the case, should we fold our hands and sit? To which I personally keep telling them, even if you fold your hands and sit, your prarabdha will not allow you to do that. And whatever action is destined to happen through you will definitely happen. And they laugh it off. But though I have the conviction, I just wanted to take your view on that. Is my understanding correct?
Absolutely correct. See, we have to live according to our swabhava, our nature. If my nature is not to fold my hands and sit, some people are more active and energetic than others. So I have to be true to the way I've been made. So this, what you're saying, is such a common objection to this teaching, but it misses this fact. Everyone acts according to the way they are made. Those who are energized and want to engage with the world, when you realize you are not the doer of your action and the results are not in your control, it doesn't mean you don't engage. It means you engage with the full understanding that you are not the doer of your actions. That is why Lord Krishna told Arjuna, the war has come unasked. In the Jnaneshwari, if you read it, Krishna tells Arjuna, the war has come unasked, so it is your gateway to heaven. He didn't say don't fight. So this is how we live the life effortless when we realize we are just living out the prarabdha and ready to face the fact that no human being knows what the next moment will bring. Could be pleasure, could be pain. This is how we face life.
And Gautam, one more thing is that this is a part of our day-to-day living, which is very significant in a way because all of us, right, be it at our workplace or be it whichever business or any area, life will always throw us two options to choose from, right? Option A or an option B. And we are so stuck. I mean, we start looking at what are the pros and cons of each of these options. Should I take the option? Should I exercise option A or should I exercise option B? If I exercise option A, what is going to be the pros and cons? Option B, pros and cons. And finally, we do take a decision of choosing option A or option B. But say a month later, if that option doesn't keep us in a good space of mind and it doesn't give us what we were expecting, there is always a remorse, right? Oh, I should have chosen the other option and I would have been in a much better place. But choosing that specific option at that point of time, even that is predestined, right? That we are born to choose that option. And that is the only reason why we chose that option. Yeah. Is that understanding correct?
You walk into a shop, you see two shirts which you like. One is yellow, one is blue. You can afford only one shirt. You have to decide, do I buy the blue or the yellow? And you say, I like the blue shirt more. What made you like the blue shirt more? Do you know? You don't know. You naturally like the blue shirt more. So there's an apparent choice. I walked into the shop. I have certain amount of money. I can buy one shirt. So I decide to buy the blue shirt. But is that really in your control? The problem is the ego wants a positive outcome all the time on the basis of its decision. You want to decide what is in your best interest and you want God to give you that. It doesn't happen. You fall in love with a girl, you think she's the ideal girl, and then afterwards you say, oh my God. You don't know. Decision is the mechanism of functioning in daily living. The problem is we want guaranteed results, but life shows us there are no guarantees. Prarabdha is prarabdha, yet decisions have to be taken. So when we don't carry this burden of the outcome of the decision being under our control, it's such a relief. It is then you really walk through life knowing you took the best decision in that circumstance, but it didn't work out if it was not meant to. And if it works out, there's no pride and arrogance because you realize that that was the decision which was meant to be taken. It wasn't my decision. So no pride and arrogance for the decision, no guilt and shame if the outcome is different. That's how I live an equanimous and peaceful life. Because pride, arrogance, guilt, shame, these are qualities of doership. I did it. That is what happened. It's actually very simple. The whole Gita is in this, the ego deluded thinks I am the doer. When we start living this, that nobody is the doer of their actions and God is the primal doer, then it is the life of peace and equanimity.
And few lines of Ramana Maharshi which always stuck with me and brought a great relief is, Ramana Maharshi says, even drinking a glass of water, it can only happen if it's predestined that at that point of time, you should be drinking water, only then you drink. Walking from one room to another room also has to be predestined. Not yesterday or day before yesterday, it has to be predestined at the time when your soul enters your mother's womb. Right. I mean, if at all, I believe that if these are seriously imbibed in our day-to-day living, I think there is nothing we would, as you rightly mentioned, there's nothing we will feel pride about or we will feel guilty about.
See, as I was discussing with Nick yesterday, if we relax into the divine blueprint which we have been born into, life becomes simpler. Just as you said. You see, there's this famous example when Bhagwan Ramana Maharshi said, there is no free will. And someone in the audience put up their hand and said, me putting up my hand means I have free will. And Bhagwan said, if I had not said there's no free will, you would not have put up your hand. You see how it's all connected. But our vision is tunnel vision. Our vision is so narrow that we feel we have free will. We have free will as a mechanism of functioning in daily living. That is it. Dayanand Saraswati said it very beautifully. He said, if you take a goat, tie it to a peg on the ground, the goat cannot go beyond the length of the rope, but within that length of the rope, it can graze on the land. So this is how free will is. Within our circumstances, it is our attitude to life which determines our peace, because it is fixed. The circumstances are fixed. Within that, we find our peace. So our free will is indeed limited. It is not this glorified thing. Because if it is glorified, it means we can control all outcomes, which we can't.
And lastly, Gautam, thanks a lot. I mean, I was in a crisis around the 2020, that year. And that is when I got introduced to your online satsangs. I used to participate in online satsangs. I used to ask many questions to you. And you have done a world of great thing for me. I mean, it's a lot of gratitude. I say thank you to you.
See, we are just postmen. Whether it is Nikhil and the work he's doing, I'm doing. In the olden days before email, the letters used to come by post. Now, the person opens the letter, reads something, and is greatly impacted. That is the ancient message which has come down through centuries. The message is the same. Thy will be done. Nobody is the doer of the actions. So it is the message, the teaching, which has changed your outlook to life. We are postmen. We are just carrying the letter because we have received the letter from someone above which changed our lives. So we are just handing the same message down. Of course, the postman is needed because without the postman, the letter does not come to you. But make no mistake, it is the teaching which transforms. That is why I always, in satsangs like this, which are more general, give this example of Chidanand Saraswati. He had to give a discourse, I don't know on which scripture, I've forgotten. And he was invited. And when he went, he found to his surprise that his place of giving the discourse was on the ground, just like where everyone was sitting. So he thought about it and he told the organizers, please put me on a pedestal, on a platform higher than the audience. And the crowd started murmuring, oh, what a big ego he has. He wants to be above us. He knew it all. He heard everyone, yet he insisted. When he sat for his talk, he said, you all must have been thinking, I have such a big ego that I want to be above you all. But the teaching which flows through me, for the teaching I asked to be raised, not for me as the body, as Chidanand Saraswati. That was a very beautiful example which touched me. So you see, because these are aspirations of the soul, you could say, the higher ideal, the realizing the self. So what we bring to it is just our earnestness. Nisargadatta Maharaj would say, your earnestness is the key, nothing else. That is the sadhana. So I'm glad that it has had an impact on you.
Just one mantra, any effort which happens through us or any decision which we take, it's predestined. So we have no other way to choose anything different to what we have done. Correct?
Yes.
Thank you, Gautam.
Om Sairam. Gautamana, I'm going through this book right now.
Which one?
Living with Faith and Patience. I come to a point where it says the importance of having a living guru. When I say this, I understand that I can get all your teachings from online. But what can be my criteria to have you as my living guru? And when I say this, I also have to get to the notice the point mentioned by Nikhilji, saying that there is no need of meeting a living guru every day. He gets to meet once in a while, but they are always connected. So what can be my criteria to...
Very simple. This answer has been given by Ramana Maharshi when he was asked this question. He said the criteria is as simple. When he was asked, how do I know a sage is a sage? He would say, by the degree of peace you feel in their presence and the sense of respect and reverence you feel for them. My teacher added one more criteria. He would say, make sure there's humility. If there's no humility, that person is not a sage. So simple.
Thank you.
And you see, the guru is not the form. The guru means consciousness. Guru is the remover of darkness, the light, the great light of knowledge. So the form, you needn't be with the form all the time. Yes, in Baba's case, the Mahabhaktas, in Ramana Maharshi's case, the closest disciples actually lived with them, next to them. Ramakrishna Paramhans and his disciples. But that era was different. In this era, it's a very different reality. So if you cannot be in physical proximity of the Guru all the time, it's okay. But as long as the teachings are operating all the time, anything in life which happens, which disturbs your peace, is now seen in the light of the teaching. That is closeness to the Guru. That is it. That is the key. You see, I give this example, which is now stale, of a first-hand experience when I had to sell my property in Goa. And I had to go to the local government body. And I was warned that this person is notoriously nasty. And he was notoriously nasty. But to our biggest surprise, in the evening, the same person was at the Sai Baba Aarti and giving prasad to everyone. I said, what has happened? Means you're taking bribes, you're being nasty to people because you're in a position of authority. And then you're going and doing aarti. That means the teaching is not in your heart. The Guru is not in your heart. You're bribing the Guru by thinking that you win favors because you're acting like I'm doing aarti, I'm doing that. So the Guru is within. Consciousness is within. That is all that is required. Backbencher. You know, in our college, the backbenchers were the ones who created the most trouble.
Om Sairam. So, I would like to narrate an instance. The kind of impact Vinny Chitluri and I has on me is so huge that every alternate day I have to listen to their voice, else I could not go to sleep as well. So, I would like to narrate an instance where that has, I can say it could be a testimony of faith as well. So, when I was studying for my CA final exam, I used to keep Baba photo on my desk, study table, and I used to study. And there was an anchor inside me that he has to qualify me at any cost. Though I am studying truly, and I was being very true with my timetable and all. Every day I used to go to library at 7 in the morning, and I used to study till 11 p.m. in the night. And every time I used to say that, it is you who is making me study all these things and like that. So it went on like some months. And thereafter, I lost a battle by 6 marks. So I have to score half, 50% of that. And I failed in CA final. Then my parents thought that there must be something wrong with this person. So you have to meet one other person. So he said me that you have to do all these things in order to only, then only you will be qualified in CA final exam. I literally argued with my parents to that extent that my Baba is there with me just because I failed in one exam. And you are going completely against him. And I have to lose my faith and patience also. And I could not tolerate that. I just came here, Hyderabad, and again I sat for exams. And this time, that ahankar was not there. This time, it was completely, I went to his temple, and I went to him, and I literally cried. And I told him that, I don't want to pass or fail. I just want you to be with me. It is the only thing which I prayed for. And when the results are out, I didn't even go anywhere. I just went to Shirdi. I went to Shirdi. And I literally switched off my phone and everything. And there only I've seen my results. And I got to know that I have got qualified. The kind of life he has given me. And till now, I always feel like it's not you who has studied for the exam. It is he who made me study the exam. And I even remember one instance where I've written one exam. I felt like I didn't write the exam properly. But when I came out and when I was discussing with my friends, I was telling them like, I don't know why Baba made me write that that exam like this and all. So that they had given me such an impact that whatever you do in your life, it's not you. It is a doer. It is always the Baba who does all these things. And you just have to keep in mind. And till now or anything in my life, whatever happens, I'm always telling that I'm not the one who is doing it. It is always Baba, and I completely surrender to him at the feet of him. And I want to live by my life like that till the end of my life. Thank you. Thank you.
Beautiful.
And living the teachings of Sai Baba has also a huge impact on my daily way of living. But one question from my side is, if you can take in this instance, I literally argued with my parents, and I, of course, Baba has given me fruitful results. But on one side of the coin, if you say you will be literally arguing also, then whether that can be considered as living the teachings of Baba, going against sometimes your parents or anyone in your family, like that, in the way of living the life. This is something which is troubling me.
Everything is a learning. Even going against is a learning. It is helping you understand life better and yourself better.
Yeah.
And if you're not the doer, then going against means what? See, we can't be too hard on ourselves.
Yeah.
We all make mistakes. We are embodied in this form. See, Nisargadatta Maharaj would say, a mistake is not a mistake unless repeated. So, this is the classroom of life, living, Rinanu Bandhan. We learn as we go along. So, don't judge yourself too harshly for arguing with your parents. It was meant to happen, so it happened. Be gentle on yourself. Be quick to apologize if you hurt someone. You can say, I didn't mean to hurt you, because your ahankar is not so strong that you say, I'm not going to say anything to this person. And flow with life. So be it. This is not a quest in being a perfect human being. This whole creation is imperfect because it's the creation, it's the dualistic life framework. Perfection is Parabrahman. So we navigate our boat through this duality of life as best as we can. Now, on a lighter note, I'll tell you something. On next channel, one video which went viral was of Meena Kapoor. You all should see it, because you know someone who's in the ICU and her...
Yeah, I've seen.
You've seen that, right? So she told me, now she was known in her building for being a lover of God. Like in Ganpati time, she would have her doors open, people would come and all that. And she was into the Divine Mother Durga Ma and all that. So everyone in the building knew Meena. So once she was waiting for the lift. Lift came, she went in, and there was no space for anyone else. And she lived on the higher floor. Lift stopped on some other floor before reaching the ground. So now it was a packed lift, and outside was a nice, robust man who wanted to come in. So everyone in the lift looked at each other that there is no space. What do we tell this man? But this man came in. So then Meena decided that everyone has kept quiet. She said, ki, bhai saab, lift is so full. So I don't think it's a good idea, in a very sweet way. You know, no one can argue with that. But when he looked at her, he said, on the contrary, aap to Paramatma hai, to main zarur aunga, kyunki kuch nahi hoga hame andar. So you see, how do we deal with people, with situations, what words we use? Are we targeting missiles at people? Or are there words coming from a space of compassion? So in this particular case, what you have mentioned, arguing, it's okay. Because at the end of the day, let's not forget, everyone is operating on their conditioning and their nature. So if sometimes an argument happens, so be it. That's all I would like to say.
There is the Leela of the coconut, if you remember the subject. Baba said, take that also to be as my will, don't take ownership. So then it applies to everything. That Leela is very precious.
But you know, honestly, your sharing is where I see some rare qualities of trust and surrender. And the one statement you made, where you said, Baba, just be with me, it doesn't matter whether I pass or fail, that proves everything.
Thank you.
One last question you wanted to ask him. After this, I think there's some prasad being served and yes. The books are available. I think Nikhil and me will be here if anyone wants to meet us or get their books signed or anything.
Hello, Nikhil ji. Hello, Gautam ji. I never knew that I would meet you today. Thank you for coming.
We didn't know we'd meet you.
Yeah, this is my first time meeting. I thought you were just some people on the internet and I was just watching your videos.
Yeah, that only.
So thank you for making videos on YouTube and, you know, you're the first one whom I turned to after having a few initial experiences of Baba, when Baba started saving my soul. So before September, October, I would like to tell just a little bit of myself. I was a 23-year-old man of full of habits, loops, patterns, a man who thought that good was evil and evil was good, who thought that he was his own God and his mind was his own God. Whatever his mind used to tell him, he used to do everything, whatever his mind used to tell him. And after September, October, when Baba found me, I didn't find Baba. When Baba found me, when Lord Hanuman started finding me, miraculous things started happening in terms of transformation. Even me being here today on this day, seeing you is a living miracle of God, because if you'd known me before September, October, you would say, ki, who is this guy? Why is this guy here? We thought it would be an April Fool's prank, because I was not like this before September, October in terms of change or transformation. I was like completely against who I am today. So despite all these transformations that God, Baba has started giving me, there is still one more thing that he has not removed. And I don't know if it's a test or an exam that I'm going through, but I'm going through immense suffering, not because God has put it, it's because I'm listening to my ego and not surrendering to Baba's feet, despite every atom of my existence lying to me, ki, you are your thoughts, you are your bodily reactions, you are what your body chemicals are telling you. I'm facing this suffering due to listening to ego and not clinging to the feet of Baba still. So I don't know how to handle, like words cannot express how much I'm going through right now. I don't know how to just cling to Baba's feet despite my mind lying to me, my body lying to me, my past lying to me, despite things saying that you are what you did yesterday, you are what you did 2 days ago. And I don't know how to just cling to Baba's feet, because I know that, I don't know, he has not removed this suffering, despite everything that he has given me since October. I'm just lost. I know that is the only answer that Baba has given me. You know everything that is lying to you. You know your ego is lying to you, your body, your mind, everything is lying to you. All you need to do is just cling to my feet and not go away. Just cling to my feet. Despite, you know, no matter how much of a lie your body is, your mind is. I don't know how to go through. I don't know. Thank you.
No, please sit. This is not a punishment. Can you give us an example of suffering?
When I act on my ego, when I act on my will.
But who is saying all this?
My mind,
my ego, when I act on my will. If you're not the doer, who is acting?
Because I'm suffering when I do that action.
You are what
based
you did,
on the mind.
You said you are what you did 2 days ago. But you're not what you did 2 days ago.
But
this is the ego coming through the back door all the time. That is your suffering.
But then should I just be happy when I did the wrong thing, or when I did something that I'm not supposed to do? Because I know it causes suffering, right? So it pains me when I do those things, when I listen to the lies of my body and my mind immensely, beyond words. I don't know, Gautamji. I don't know how to just cling to Baba's feet, despite everything lying to me.
It's so peculiar, because you are the classic example of you yourself saying you were very different in September, October, and you are where you are today. and yet you are living a life of suffering. That means you were at peace before September, October.
Yes, but I was ignorant, right? Because I did not know that those things were evil, or unknowingly or knowingly, when I was doing those things.
So now you are aware. Now you are aware. You know, I'll give you another example. Meditation. When people ask me what is my idea of meditation, I say whether it is 5 minutes or half an hour, whatever thoughts come, don't stop them. Just witness them. Don't judge them as good or bad. Because when you judge them as good or bad, the ego has again come in. Just witness for those 5 minutes or half an hour, the thoughts coming without being involved. What will happen? By and by, in the waking state, whatever happens in my life, the quality of witnessing will be there. Sakshi Bhav, witness consciousness. So even this, what you're saying, has to be witnessed without judging it. This self-judgment, which is going on and on in your mind, I did this bad, I did this, I did that, that is the troublemaker. Then where is the surrender? So there is a misconception here. Because when there is love, trust and surrender, there is no option for anything besides peace. It is not an option anymore. So you have to look at that. Unfortunately, our time is up, but it would be very interesting to have a conversation with you at some point. But the fact, you know, my teacher would say something very beautiful. He would say, if God has brought you so far, why do you think he'll drop you here? That is why always consider your glass half full and not half empty. Keep the faith. Very few are drawn on to the spiritual path. Krishna has said it. Out of millions, there are thousands, and out of thousands, one knows me by name. So the fact that you are seeking, you're aware, you're not lost in the mundane life, you're aware of your patterns, your suffering, is a very big step. Not to be taken lightly, because the journey of awareness has begun. And this is the journey home, back to the source you are going to reach. The mind will try its best to make you go astray. See the mind doing what it's doing. But keep the faith, the Shraddha, the Saburi. Pahu, as he says, we'll see what happens, is all I would tell you. Let's see what happens. But what you expressed was so beautiful. So don't put it into the pit with your current suffering, because you had certain insights which have changed you. So you have to keep the faith.
Sure, Gautamji, I'll try my best.
That's all we can do. We can only try our best.
I would like to add something. There is a certain degree of honesty where you're able to see your suffering, which is very beautiful. But I would also like to share something, that the last 10 years I've been graced, Baba has given me this work, that I can say with complete conviction that it is by His grace alone we can come to Him. It is by His grace alone we can be His devotee. It is by His grace alone we can take His name. We can think of Him, be with His devotees. It is not us. So with that humble prayer, you can just pray to Baba that, Baba, bestow me with your devotion, that I may think of you. And see, there is a certain degree of earnestness. There is a certain degree of honesty you have. Otherwise, you would not be where you are. So just trust that if that is earnest, it is sincere, He will take you forward. But it is only His grace. We cannot do anything. That's why there are people who tell me when, you know, you do prachar, you don't really push. I say, no. It is our good, great fortune, the blessings of our ancestors, that we can come to Baba's lotus feet. And I always hold that dear, that in every moment in life, it is His grace. So in the right direction, but as Gautamji said, don't be too hard on yourself either.
And one more thing, become friends with that man at the back.
You read my mind. Yeah, it's satsang is so important, you know. You have met, just if you could share it with, yeah, so. Yes.
Thank you, Gautamji, Nikhilji, for coming to Hyderabad. We are so blessed, in fact. Just two, three issues. One is...
two, three issues will take another satsang. You'll have to invite us back.
To what extent, you know, a mind is given and to what extent it is acquired. In the sense that how to stop this game of, you know, dealing with mind and getting of it, in the sense that is number one. Number two, I think some more literature on love, what is love and how to bring love into living, probably would help all of us. And number three, we are waiting for a retreat at Hyderabad. Thank you so much.
If we are invited, we'll come. See, the mind is the working mind and the thinking mind. The thinking mind is the problem, not the working mind. And we are all operating at the level of the mind because we are a collection of identities, conditionings and thoughts. The whole spiritual journey is letting our lives no longer be consumed by the thinking mind, which is always in the dead past or an imaginary future. The joke is, when we are 20 years old, we are thinking about the future. When we are 40, we are thinking, and when we are 60, we are thinking without realizing most of our life has gone, because the mind is living in the future. The future is becoming small. Past is becoming big, so life is full of regrets. I should have done that. I should have been that. The thinking mind is the problem. And when it comes to love, if you are living your master's teaching, you will be an embodiment of love. You don't even have to do anything. When you accept people the way God has created them, that is love. You don't have to hug everyone. You don't have to kiss everyone. That is why my spiritual guide, when he was dying, one man said, you've spoken about the highest Advaita for 30 years of your life. You sum it up in one sentence. For me, I'm a simple man. And he said, all right, this is my simple line for you. Love each one in your life as if you have created them. So simple. Because you see, what is love? Love is operating from the heart instead of the mind. The mind is calculative. Where I get benefit, I will operate. A person I love more, I'll give an expensive gift on his birthday. Someone I love less, I'll give a smaller gift. Mind is transactional and calculating. Love is equal to all. Someone new comes into your life, you will be as loving as a friend you met 30 years ago. And your friend you met 30 years ago, how can you do that? Yeah, I know you for 30 years. That is all the mind games. So you will know when you're operating from the heart. Nobody needs to tell you. It is a knowing. It's so simple. I forgot the third in between.
Retreat at Hyderabad.
Retreat. You know, honestly, I was so pleasantly surprised by the weather in Hyderabad and the people. I've been here 2 years ago to Vijayama's satsang. I had a great time there. They spoiled me. And you can feel free to spoil me again. So let's see, God willing, if it happens. It's just a 1 hour, 15 minute flight from Mumbai. So it's very simple to get here. So hopefully, with the Baba's divine decree, we shall be back soon. Okay, thank you everyone.
I would like, we'll take a few questions at the signing, since we are out of time. I would also want to thank all of you for coming. And also in particular, Rangaraoji, Prabhakarji, for having helped set up everything, Hema, Janani, all the volunteers who've helped with the event today. A heartfelt thank you. And yeah, by Baba's grace, if he wills it, we would be most happy to come back. And we'll be, if devotees would like to get copies of the books, Just a minute on Vinayama's book. So today is a very special day. We have her biography that has it's got launched here, and yesterday the first copy was placed at Baba's feet in Shirdi. So if devotees would like to get copies, they are available outside along with Living with Faith and Patience as well. So thank you so much for coming.
You know, you see her eyes, it's yes. Like Sai Baba's face. There's I read in the Gauri Vimlananda's book that if you are consumed by a guru, you start looking like your guru. So we become what is in our consciousness. That is the bottom line. If your guru is in your consciousness all the time, you are one with the guru. Nothing really needs to be done besides that. Thank you.
Thank you.